Welcome back, listeners. On this episode, I spoke to Brian Kane about the production design on Yellow Jackets. We chatted about crashing a plane in the middle of the woods, treating the forest as a main character, the show's rabid fan base, and much more. I do just want to congratulate you on the now Peabody nominated Yellow Jackets.
Right?
Yeah. Got announced about an hour ago.
I was just reading that.
Oh yeah. What do you make of all of this success that the show's had so far?
I think it's warranted. I mean, it's the show is fresh, you know, it's unique and it's smart. It's kind of nice to be, Showtime has been fantastic and that has a lot to do with it. They gave the writers a lot of leeway to tell their story. They gave me in the art department a lot of leeway when it came to, my visual storytelling. Working for network television, like the Disneys and the ABCs and all that, it's a lot more restrictive. So, the show is... I loved watching it myself, which I can't say about a lot of things that I've made.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, that's just the reality. I mean,
yeah.
As filmmakers, it's nice. I mean, I can't. I've been doing this a long, long time. There were times where a couple of decades ago where you just took what came your way. Now I'm far more picky, but it's still like, the movie I'm doing right now is fun, but I'm not the demographic at all. Yellow Jackets was smart. It's nice to work on something that does not assume that your viewers are stupid. Like you really have to, it's a thinking show. It's got a lot of layers, a lot of character. So it was great.
Yeah. And now the world continues into season two at some point, which is exciting. And trying yep. to put all those points together. I mean, I was definitely late to the party when it came to, because it was kind of like, oh, there's this new Showtime show, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden it's just like, I don't know, every single week, it just kept getting more viewers. And I was like, okay, episode 5, I was like, okay, fine, let's go, let's watch the thing. And it pulls together such, I mean, the adult cast is just people I've loved for so long and are just so long overdue for this like recognition. I mean, when Melanie won her Critics' Choice Award, I mean, her speech, I mean, it was just like everything that you could ever ask for in an actress. So I'm extremely jealous of you, the fact that you got to work on such a groundbreaking show. It's lovely and it's real and it's out there. And I think that's what all TV should be, thought provoking and moving the needle forward. So I think you've definitely accomplished all that.
Yeah, I concur. And Melanie was such a dream to work with her. I mean, I've always loved, Christina and Juliet, but Melanie just, what a powerhouse. She's such a talented woman. Mm-hmm. I love the success she's getting. But the junior cast was really good as well. I thought, I thought the people that they cast as the junior versions of our leads were just did a fantastic job. My son is, my eldest son is just watching it right now with his wife. And I get these texts like, WTF, really? All the time. It's great.
Yeah. So how did this project come across your desk? How did the log line read for you?
It was kismet for me. I was wrapping up another show, Motherland, about like soldier witches. Completely different storyline, and reached out to a producer who I've been trying to work with for a long time, who's the line producer over on Yellow Jackets, and just let him know that I was becoming available. And he said, really? I've got this project and you're a little late to the table, but let's talk about it. And sent me the project. And I knew right away when I read, really episode one, that's all I had. Well, two actually, the pilot had already been shot, that I wanted to be part of it. It was smart and it was deep, and I was dying to find out what was going to happen. And what was really interesting was, the writers even kept us in the dark.
Really?
We had storylines, but there were like the ending, Thaisa, and the basement crypt. I didn't know any of that was coming. I knew they kept on alluding to the fact that we need a basement. Just so you know, we're going to need a basement. But yeah, they didn't share it. So it was a surprise to all of us.
How interesting.
So it came our way. But what was interesting about it was because I had just come off this young YA show, was that although the storyline and at first glance, it's a teen soccer drama, it's so much more. And what was really fun about it too, and got me excited, was the fact that we had two storylines or had two timelines. Any time as a production designer that I could, start playing around with different eras, it's a blast. Mm-hmm. And what was fun about Yellow Jackets as well was we kept it subtle. I mean, a lot of times, watching the like true crime shows that are on right now, they kind of hit you over the head with the era, make sure that everybody's holding their 90s cell phones and that kind of thing. And it's not, that's not the world that we're in. We kept it quite subtle. It was fun.
Yeah, no, I definitely like that. The background is sort of a supporting figure in the show. But how, so you get the pilot, or the pilot's already been shot. So how do you build off that world, knowing what's already been established, and what sort of lies ahead?
It was a lot of discussion with Jab, Jonathan, Ashley, and Bart. We got tired of saying all three names, so I came up with that acronym, Jab. We really thought about that world. While the pilot had been shot, we did end up reshooting a lot of it. There was a lot of recasting that happened between the pilot. Well, not a lot. There was some recasting that happened between the shooting of the pilot and the airing. So we ended up reshooting, everything that had to do with the reporter at Maloney's house, because we recast them. Because originally the pilot was shot in LA, and when they brought it up to Vancouver, there were certain roles they were trying to cast locally. That was one of them. Mm-hmm. Recast the daughter again for the same reasons. Recast a lot of the secondary characters, but there were some characters that were just nailed it on the head, even though they only had a couple of episodes. We brought them up anyways. Oh my goodness, I forget his name, but the best friend who was part of the heist. It'll come to me. The one with the Yellow Jackets tattoo. So when the script came, we started talking about what was coming down the line. We knew that eventually the girls were going to leave the airplane. The airplane was all us. So they only shot the interior portion of the crash and the pilot. We knew that we needed to take an airplane, a 727 narrow body, and figure out a way to crash it in the woods, and, you know, deep in the woods. So we did a lot of research and development in a very short period of time. Like I said, I started prep probably a month later than I should have on this show. So we had to design the airplane, design the cabin, design Thais's brownstone, design Shauna's place, and the motel, and had everything built and ready to shoot, you know, in T minus 6 weeks, basically. So it was fun. 24/7, we were working to get that done.
Oh, I can only imagine. So yeah. How does one crash a plane into the middle of the woods?
Well, we researched, you know, in our carpenter shop, I had an amazing construction coordinator, Patrick Letarius, who I've been working with for, you know, a decade now. And we figured a way to break it, to build it in 10-foot chunks that we could lock together and skin out in the forest. So we built these 10-foot chunks because it's both an interior and an exterior plane. And we drove them out to this place called Panther Paintball. It's like an old paintball place that was going to allow us to take it over for the entire season. Funnily enough, because the deal is it becomes part of their paintball course when the show gets, you know, ended. Yeah. So we've been built in 10-foot chunks. You know, we cut this swath through the forest, did a lot of research, you know, worked with the FAA, you know, research on what plane crashes are like and what debris patterns are like and what happens to the trees when a plane crashes, you know, in such a manner. And we buried this plane and we built it. And I was so proud of that opening sequence for episode 2. You know, when the girls finally break out of the airplane, it looked pretty spot on from everything that we have had researched.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I'm just astonished by that. And really have never thought of how do you crash an airplane into the ground when it obviously did not crash.
Well, not only that, but the director, Jamie Travis, who did episode 2 and was responsible for the airplane, you know, he had a great vision as well as to how he wanted to choreograph this thing, and it was quite relentless. So, you know, between special effects and stunts and construction, we had, I'm really proud to say, it was 95% practical effects as well. I mean, the only digital effects we had were a forest extension, and, you know, took out some of the very tops of the trees. We did it all practically, but there was a lot of holy fuck moments. Did that just happen? Like the chopping off of the coach's leg. And when our makeup effects guy, and we all thought we were going to have to do that green screen, and he said, no, we can do this. And he built this prosthetic leg that, you know, stretches and insinuates. We just said, oh my God, that's amazing. So it was so much fun doing it. I have goosebumps thinking back to when he first showed it to us and doing that practically. Yeah.
I'm hesitating because I'm very bad blood. So I watched it. But I
ended you watched up, that fast, didn't you?
Just was like, oh, okay, thank you, awesome. Happened, and then kind
it
of
was, it was disgust. It was disgusting.
I can only imagine. But I mean, what other sort of interesting facets, challenges did you face on this particular project that is just so unique to Yellow Jackets?
One sort of purveying theme that we had was the forest is, you know, it became a character in our show, you know, that in both storylines, you know, it was really obvious in the 96 storyline that the forest was something that both held our girls captive, but at times rewarded them with life. Like, you know, they were starving and it brought them food. And you know, there was that whole other storyline where, you know, that we find out in the end, like Lottie's almost religion of Mother Earth and forest, you know, calling forward the bear to feed them when they're starving and that kind of thing. But we also try to very subtly bring the forest influence into the adult girls' lives as well. You know, for Thaisa, pardon me, who had this veneer of strength and respectability as a senator, you know, she left the forest behind, but you know, whether it was with the really strong forest green paint that I painted her often, or the, you know, the jungle mural that was her dining room, or the, you know, the overgrown garden that we had, you know, behind the house. So every time she was in her house, you know, and you had the windows, you had this forest that was creeping in. So again, you know, it was about subtlety. You know, for Natalie, even the textures and the colors that we chose for the motel, you know, where she was often like lying on the carpet and sitting on the carpet. And that was all her as well. I mean, you know, the writers write, you know, she's sitting at a table or sitting on the bed, and she was just such a visceral actor. And she just always like took it down to this sea of green. So even for her, you know, the influence was there. For Melanie, you know, we had these really subtle nature prints throughout the house, and shades of green and shades of wood. So again, even though outwardly the girls had left the forest behind, its influence was always there. Mm-hmm. You know, and even the way it was shot, like the cinematographer, you know, used these somewhat sinister points of view that you never know what they were, and it was the forest watching over the girls.
Interesting.
You know,
that is so subtle. Yeah. Because now I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch to
go back.
I didn't notice any of that. So that's absolutely fascinating that was all sort of
just
in the back of everything. So, that's so cool. And I mean, what makes you particularly proud of this project?
Things like that you are so influenced by these characters and by the story. But I like, as a production designer, it's when you don't notice that stuff, but you're influenced by it, that I know I've done my job. You know, because when it pounds you in the head, like if I'm watching something, you know, I watch it obviously as a visual storyteller. I have a particularly sharp eye for the way something is art directed. And if it's not subtle, and if I notice it, I don't think that the job has been done. I want to feel it. I want to be influenced by it, you know, but I don't need to see, like, in order to say that this story is taking place in San Francisco, I don't need to see, you know, a postcard or a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge in every set. Mm-hmm. That's not subtle, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something that we were really proud of. And how many people just are rabid fans about it? You know, it's very cool. How into it people have gotten. Like, it's quite interesting. We tried, like I said, the jab kept so many things close to the chest. So there was a lot of things that I had established in episodes 1, 2, 3, 4 that nipped me in the butt in episode 7, 8, and 9, kind of thing. You know, Shauna's house was filled with all these porcelain rabbits. And I could only guess, like, it's quite interesting, because what I don't know and I can't get answers on as a production designer, in order to motivate what I'm doing, I write my own backstories. Like, like for the characters and why things happen. And so, you know, it wasn't until episode, I don't remember what it was, 6, 7, 8, when Shauna and her husband were invited to Jackie's parents' house for her birth death day celebration that happens every year, and they got the porcelain rabbits. I'm like, that's why we're doing that. You know, boy, was I off. But yeah, it's cool. So there were a couple of mistakes that we made in the show.
I need to know the mistakes.
Well, like it's like continuity mistakes. Like for instance, there was actually in that episode, there was a scene where Shauna goes up to Jackie's bedroom, which hasn't been touched in 25 years. And she pulls out her journal and pulls out a photograph. And the journal was meant to just be, it was never meant to be read. It was just meant to be the basically the envelope for this photograph that she finds. But of course, in the digital age, people pause and read things. So I had given my art department assistant, because we were so busy, the task of, you know, because she was young and she had a feminine hand. I'm like, listen, why don't you fill the pages for me? What should I do? I'm like, well, you know, our story is 1996. She's supposed to be 14. So let's say it's 1993, 1994, you know, favorite movies, favorite songs, hottest guys, that kind of thing, right? So just fill the pages with that kind of stuff. And you know, use your best 14-year-old girl hand on the job. And she did a list of movies, and of the 10 movies, 7 of them were for 1996. So she got the dates wrong. And all of a sudden, you know, on these fan websites, you know, these fan theories start coming around like, I knew it, Jackie's a time traveler, or Jackie's been in an insane asylum the whole time. She's actually alive. So stuff like that happens, but it happens because the fans are so rabid and they're so, you know, interested in what's happening and why it's happening, including myself.
That's insane. That's honest. I mean, that's even like worse than the Game of Thrones water bottle or whatever that was, the Starbucks cup. It's just like, Jesus, because I probably would have never even noticed that. Well, and now I'm going to go back and look at there are so many different Easter eggs. Now I'm going to have, I'm going to be emailing you saying, well, what's this mean? No, seriously.
You made another mistake, Brian.
No, I wouldn't say anything like that, because I applaud your work so much. And I mean, just the fact that you guys were able to create these two worlds is just, and to be able to transport, I mean, ultimately you want to be transported to these places for, I mean, you're having people invest 10 plus hours of their life into something. And obviously they're either going to stick on to it or they're going to walk away. And obviously people suck along for the ride. And now we go into whatever, I mean, who knows? I mean, that's the beauty about a forest. I mean, there could be subsections in there that we don't even know about. So, I mean, that's what excites me.
Totally. And what's interesting, again, because I have no idea. I know that, you know, Jab have sort of this 5-year, apparently the girls were in the forest for 19 months. That's how long they were stuck there before they were found. I don't know how they're found. I don't know that storyline. Supernatural element, I don't know how much of it is real and how much it's not. Like, there's so much alluding to, like, you know, in the first episode, they allude to the fact that Lottie, you know, who's taking antipsychotics, that there's something wrong with her. But then we get into the young Lottie story point where she actually foretells, you know, a car crash and prevents it with her parents. And so her father thinks that her seeing into the future is her crazy, but is it? Yeah. Does she really, you know, does she really speak to the spirit of the forest? You know, who knows? Okay. So we tried to drop all these, you know, we dropped all these little Easter eggs into the cabin, you know, with the, you know, the animal skulls and all the furs and everything else on the walls that eventually paid off when the girls had their weird prom in the forest, mm-hmm. You know, and tripped out of mushrooms and you know, lost it on the two male characters in the show.
Yeah. Who knows?
It was interesting.
They might not be cannibals. You never know. I'm kidding.
It's a true story, right? I mean, you know, when we watched the pilot, we all assumed that they, you know, attacked and killed Jackie, and then you watch episode 10 and then you see that she froze to death.
Yeah. So who knows? The you first know? Shot could all be
right.
Yeah. So interesting.
Totally. Which was so sad for all of us, you know, because we all became vested in the characters as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can only imagine. But I guess final question for you. I mean, are you attached to season two? Or will timelines not allow?
I don't know. I know that it's been picked up and that's as far as it goes. I've got a lot of irons in the fire right now, including doing a lot of promotion for Yellow Jackets. Showtime is an incredibly supportive company when it comes to wanting to make sure that their shows get the accolades and the awards that they deserve. You know, they're sending me to Denver at the beginning of next month to something called Series Fest. Myself, costume designer, and the music supervisors. Music was amazing on that show, was it not?
Yeah.
Such a big part of that show and the tone that's set for it. So, you know, we're going to do a question and answer there. You know, they're submitting us for every potential awards show. But I've got, I've got a show in Atlanta and another one in North Carolina that have both reached out because they want the, you know, the person who did Yellow Jackets because they love the production design so well. So there's a lot going on. I don't know if the timing is going to work out.
Wow. I mean, it's getting noticed, obviously, like you said, and fans are rabid over it. So you've created some cult in the world of rabid fans, but I completely admire the work that you guys were able to put forward, and it's just been such a pleasure to even just get the tip of some of these Easter eggs and all of the insight that you gained from the show.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jackson Vickery. Graphics were done by Dylan Michael, and the opening and closing theme were done by Sterling Gavinsky.